You are listening to the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast.
There's a chance here for Donegal. Rory Kavanagh gets it inside. No free given. There's Emmett Bolton. Here's a chance.
He has it.
It's dropping over the bar. Kevin Cassidy has surely put Donegal in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Okay, hello and welcome back to the Mick and Mac GAA Football Podcast. Mac, how are you?
All good, my man. Enjoying the weather. Nice and relaxed here up in Cavan, thank God.
Good stuff. Also delighted to be joined by a man who not only was a great servant for Donegal, but a man I'm also blamed for every hangover I've had over the last two summers in Gweedore. Kevin Cassidy, how are you?
Good. Not too bad.
We were saying, how's all up in Gweedore at the moment?
It's grand. It's good. You know, the weather was half decent. You know, it was last, you could say, 6 weeks. So at least you can get out and about. What kind of doing your own thing, you know, myself, yous are all doing the same. Probably each club is doing their own wee bit. It's not the same though, unless you're with the lads and even getting access to the GAA pitch, you know what I mean? We're driving past it to go down to the golf club to do a wee bit down there, you know, it's just strange, you know.
And obviously, you working in Chivikis and stuff, what's the story with that? Are you hoping to get it open this summer or?
It's very well. The two lines of work I'm in, one is the Gaeltacht College, where the students were to come here Easter time right through until, you know, probably August. That's completely closed down. And then Chivikis as well, obviously, is closed. So we're just unsure. We're waiting for guidelines and to see what the regulations are and what we can work with. But you know what I mean? It's very hard to ask anybody to work there either. So it's just a tough one, you know.
Yeah, you just have to wait and see, I suppose. Right, sure. We'll get started. Cass, some people might know, you grew up in Glasgow for the first few years of your life. What was that like before coming over to Donegal?
Yeah, it was a good experience. You know, obviously completely different to here. We were in a housing estate, and it was Hamilton. It was just kind of in the outskirts of Glasgow. So we're kind of, I enjoyed it, to be honest with you. I loved the close proximity of the neighbours and the kind of the way everybody would look out for each other. And we used to go back, even when we moved back to Ireland, we used to go back every summer for the whole summer once the schools was finished. And you would just be out in the streets till all hours playing football and messing about. So I really enjoyed it. But at the same time, I suppose it wasn't the best of place to raise a family. So that's why they decided to make the move here, you know.
And would you find the change when you came up to Gweedore quite difficult to adapt to, or?
It was at the start, you know. Obviously, you know, everything's next door to you, and the ice cream van even calls to your front door. But back here, it's slightly different. But we kind of took to it quick enough, and you know, I suppose we're kind of used to it as well because we used to visit here. My granny was from here. Okay. She moved to Glasgow for work, so we settled, you know, happily. And I wouldn't change it for the world now. You know, a family of my own, it's definitely the best place to raise a family.
And you're a big Celtic fan as well?
Yeah, massive. Living over there is probably part of your heritage, your culture. It's passed down to you. So we kind of kept it up when I come here, and I try and get over as much as I can. Me and the wee fella have a season ticket. So obviously we haven't been over in a good while now, but hopefully now, maybe new year, things will turn again.
Those celebrations were deadly when you were all out on the roads, beeping the horns, going around Gweedore.
Yeah, we're just kind of sitting here, and we get a wee bit of slag in here because obviously a lot of Man U fans, Liverpool fans living around here, and they'll be saying, Jesus, why are you following that team and all the rest? So there's quite a lot of Celtic fans around here. So it's just my brother kind of sent a message, says, listen, may as well do something. We're all sitting in the house anyway. So we took off in a wee cavalcade, and it was a bit of crack anyway.
I looked deadly. Right, so I suppose, how did you get involved in GAA when you went over, when you moved over to Gweedore? Was it straight away or a couple of years when you were in school? Or?
Yeah, mostly soccer, played first, came here, and then obviously national school is where you see it first, and out in the play, the yard, we had a kind of a tarmac at the back of the school, and there was two sets of goals there, and that's where it's really started. So you start to play there every lunchtime, and it starts to get competitive, it starts to get serious. You start to pick teams during classes to go out and play then at lunchtime. And that's where it took off from there. And just probably then down under 10s, 12s, 14s. And I don't think I got really serious about GAA until I was maybe 16, 17, I started to take a real interest in it, and I kind of left the soccer behind.
Oh, and would you have had much underage success with Queen Lord themselves? Or?
We would have had, in fairness, our team growing up, we were quite lucky. I think all the way from under 12s, we have been the dominant force in the county. We'd have won our age group at every level. And I think that's, you know, it was a massive help for our club, because at that time, our club had gone 41 years, 42 years without a senior title. And it has the most titles. And Donegal, you know, so it was a big, big lull there. And I think in 99, our minor team, we won the minors. And then 9 or 10 of us came straight through onto the senior team. I think it was a massive help, because those young lads, we were all just used to winning. You know what I mean? You're out to win. Whereas I suppose all the years of getting beat, the lads in the senior dressing were kind of, maybe the confidence levels weren't good. So I think it worked out well. The time was good.
Yeah, good stuff, Kevin. And I suppose with your club, like I've talked to a couple of county lads like this before. Like, what does Guido as a club mean to you, Kevin?
It's everything, and I think if you ask any of our county lads, it's the be all and end all. It's like any rural parish. You know yourselves, you've been up here. It's all we have in the area, and we're surrounded by obviously beaches and what have you. But it's a number one interest in the parish, along with that in the language. You know, and something we're really proud of. And growing up, we would have heard of, you know, all the teams that would won 2, 3, 4 in a row championships, and they were dominating the scene here in Donegal for years. And then for us to go off the radar, it felt as if it was our job to get us back in the map. So that's why it means so much to us. And I'm sure if you talk to any of the lads who played for Donegal over the last 15, 20 years, you know, if you were given a choice, club or county, we would choose Guidoor all the time, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose if we leap frog on to kind of the kind of county scene, when did you get the ball rolling with the county jumping on from the club?
It was 99 after the minors. I was always a kind of a stocky enough kind of fella, so I was playing midfield for minors, and I got called into the senior panel at that time, so I'd been about 18, but it was just a different era then. Like, the training was, you're talking about 400, 800 metre runs. It was just brutal, you know. And for a young lad who used to carry a few pounds, it was tough going. So I lasted about 3 months, and I was cut adrift before the National League started. And then it was kind of played away at club. And then it was really 2002 before I got my next chance. And I suppose the first chance helped me, because I was ready the second time around, you know.
And was it Mickey Moran who gave you your first opportunity, was it?
Yeah, Mickey Moran. He was a manager at the time. I think it was ready. You know yourself, you're playing for the seniors, and you're kind of, I suppose, I had that wee bit of hurt in me that I didn't push on the first time. And you're playing then for Guidoor against these lads who are playing for the county, and you're kind of saying to yourself, you know, Jesus, I'm as good as they are, you know. So you're waiting for your time. So Mickey Moran was coming down to a game and get over to watch me. You know, at that time they would send out the word that, you know, you're coming to watch you or whatever. Like, so John Gilday at the time was Donegal's, I suppose, go-to man, and he was in the middle of the field. So that day I just made it my point to make, you know, to lay down a marker and to try and dominate him from start to finish. And luckily I did so. And then Mickey Moran gave me the shout, and that was it then for about 10, 12 years, you know.
I was reading, there was a good story when you were at the start of the career with Mickey Moore, and as manager, you were in Galway for a challenge match, and he's had a bit of fun on the Saturday night.
Jeez, yeah, at that time, I suppose, like, Donegal got a bad rep at that time, because I think everything we did was just all over the place. I already knew about it. But that time we went down to play, I think we were after losing the under-21 Ulster final. And this, I think it was a Saturday evening, and the senior bus waited for us. There were 6 or 7 of us on the panel, and took us down to Galway because the lads were playing a challenge the next day, and we were obviously part of the senior setup. So we went down to the hotel anyway, but long story short, we went down, there was a wee village, and we went down for a few pints, and we didn't come home. So that was the first taste of Donegal. And I suppose that was just us. Like, we were seriously committed men, but once the steady pin was pulled, there was no putting it back in.
Yeah, yeah. I was the head the next day playing the match.
Do you know what? We're trying to hide it. I didn't come in until I think 6 or 7 that day, that morning. But you're worrying about Mickey because he was so good to us for bringing us in, you know. So we just, we can try to keep the head together. And he was giving out a wee bit because he heard boys had 1 or 2 pints. He didn't know the extent until later on that day. But we actually went out and we gave a good account of ourselves against Galway. So it worked out all right.
And what was Mickey Moran like as a manager? Obviously, you went on to Mayo and others. You did decent enough, but how was it Donegal for him?
Yeah, I told you earlier about the, you know, the training methods in, I suppose, 98 and 99. When his methods were completely different. Everything revolved around the ball. All your fitness drills were done around the ball. It was still extremely tough, but you know yourself playing, if there's a ball involved, it's easier, you know yourself. So we enjoyed it, and like, he was just such a gentleman. I suppose at that time, we needed a figure that was going to be strong, whereas Mickey wasn't that figure. He was so nice and so easy to get on with, and he had great time for the young lads. So nothing but respect for him. And, you know, he's, obviously what he's achieved in the game is unbelievable, you know.
And say, when you broke on to the county panel, Kev, like, did you find that it was a big step up from playing with Guido? Like, did you find it hard to break in, or was it easy going?
No, I think at the start, because 99, when I went in first, I remember going up to the first training session and we had a game, and I just felt the intensity was just a step or two above that. But, you know, then when I was going in as a 20-year-old in 2002, you were kind of ready for it because your body had developed a wee bit. So it wasn't so much in a step up as in the level that you were playing at. What I found was just the commitment that was required. Like, to play there and to be there was just was crazy. Like that year, it was just basically what I did for the year was train, go back to the house and sleep. That was basically it. I just made the decision that we're going to give it a proper rattle. Now, don't get me wrong, after big games, championship matches, we enjoyed ourselves, but that's all we did for the year, because you had to do that, and that's the big step up I noticed, you know.
Yeah. And who were some of the lads you broke onto the county scene with, Kev? Like, if when you're looking back, who were some of the bowlers that you got involved with?
Yeah, like, see, I spoke about Ghidorah early on. A group of young players came through. We were similar with Donegal. Like, we were good underage. That time, Christy Toy, Colin McFadden, Rory Kavanagh, we would all came on at the same time. So we were all knocking about at college as well together. So there was a good wee chemistry there.
Good party.
And again, yeah. Again, you were just, those lads were used to winning, and they wanted to win. So they brought a wee bit of energy to that team, and that's why we had a wee bit of success. Like, obviously didn't win anything 2002 and 2003, but we went in a wee bit of run. Something Donegal probably hadn't done in a while, you know.
He just touched on bit of success. Brian McAniff comes in. He was the chairman of the county board at the time, and no one wanted to take the job over.
Yeah. After Mickey left, it was just, you know what, there was a wee bit of, because it was, they just say after each game there would be a session, and back then what used to happen is there would be an ex-day session. That's every team did it, you know what I mean? Yeah. So if you played on the Sunday, you were doing all day on a Monday in a pub somewhere, maybe in Letterkenny or Donegal Town or something. And where Mickey was coming from, Mickey couldn't understand this mentality, and he just chose to step away. So this is obviously, it's not the kind of culture that I'm used to. So nobody really wanted to touch the job because they thought that they had a bunch of headbangers, you know what I mean? Brian was chairman. He tried to find a manager. He couldn't do so. And then, credit to him, he stepped in, and he stayed there for a couple of years.
And 2003 went well. You obviously had a bad start losing to Fermanagh, but you went on to beat like the Longford, Galway, Down, Sligo, and before you knew it, you were in an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah. Back then, there was something funny about Donegal. We didn't... Also, championship didn't suit us because it was too rigid, too structured. Our lads used to love to just go out and play. And, you know, if you go and you play a Sligo or a Galway or teams like that, there was just, you didn't know each other that well. It was just a game of football, and it suited our lads down to the ground. And that's why we went in those runs. And obviously then we played our man in the semi-final. Looking back, we probably should have beaten them had we been clued in a wee bit more tactically and stuff. But you know, there was, it was a great run for a county that probably hadn't gone on a run for a wee while.
Yeah.
And say the Ulster Championship county wise, Kev, like, how do you think it went for Donegal before the Jim McGuinness era?
I think we lost something like 5 finals or 6 finals, I'm not sure. Like I've said this a number of times, we just went out, like, we played our man a couple, a good few actually, and we just went out. If I was playing number 7, I picked up their number 10. It was simple as that. Mm-hmm. There was no moving around as in matchups, there was no system of play. There was no dropping back. We didn't even go near way to that stage. Whereas the likes of our man, Tyrone, were further down the line. They were looking into tactics and matchups and structures. And like looking back there now, if we had some of that there, we probably had more success. But we just didn't have it at the time.
And like, I'm from Cavan myself, and we would have had you in 2011, 2012. Like, can you remember much from them games? Like, were the tough kind of dogged games or...?
I remember 2011, I should have been sent off down to Cavan.
What was he doing again?
There was one of the players, and anyway, I can't remember what his name was.
Kelly Johnston.
So, anyway, the tempers were up, and we had, that was a big year for us, because we knew we had to make something happen. We knew, listen, if it was either now or never. And going to Cavan that game was a wee bit edgy, and the game could have went either way. It was a wee bit bad blood, and it kind of hit me a shot going past anyway. But long story short, down beside the sideline, I think Val Andrews was the manager. So he collided, and he kind of was getting off the ground. But yeah, as I seen him getting off the ground, I was coming full steam ahead, and my knee just went straight into his head. I remember thinking, Jesus, I'm going to get the line here, and McGuinness would have lost the plot. But thankfully, I just got a yellow card anyway.
Jesus, Brian never looked at the ref after, yeah.
I was glad, and I was a quiet boy after that, I tell you.
Oh, us Cavan lads are very sound though, Kev. I'm disappointed with that.
100%. You know what? I never ever had any hassle with any Cavan lads. They're always good friends. Growing up, I know if you have Nicholas Walsh and those lads would have been our minor age group.
Yeah.
And they actually beat us in a club Ulster minor up in Belfast. So
yeah.
some good ballers in Cavan, you know.
Oh, there is, yeah, including myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You haven't seen him play.
You don't want to.
Okay, so just bring you back then. You were talking about there, about Donegal maybe lacking the tactical nous of some other teams, like Armagh and Tyrone maybe back then. So you, the manager like John Joe Doherty, I remember reading before, people were saying maybe there was a lack of preparation in relation to tactics. At that time, in comparison, maybe obviously McGuinness came afterwards. Was that the massive difference between the two, maybe, going forward?
Yeah. Again, you can go through, like, obviously, like, Mickey Moore was there, John Joe was there, Brian McGaver was there, Brian McInniff was there. Slowly but surely, we were kind of copping on to what other teams are doing, and we're catching up with them. You have to remember that Jim had played in all those teams who failed. And we, after games, we would talk, and we would say, did you notice this about them? Or did you notice how they were switching from this to that? So we were picking up wee things. So I think when Jim decided to go into management, he had learned all these wee things that we were missing, and he was the perfect guy to pull it all together. After John Joe's term, things were rock bottom again, and players kind of questioning marks hanging over them. And Jim came in, and he knew what was required, and he carried out to a T.
And so obviously when Jim comes in, do you remember your first conversation with him before we took over?
Yeah, I remember. I was actually retired at the time. I retired after the last game, and he called me. And he spoke for a good half an hour, 40 minutes on the phone about what he was doing and what his plans were. But at that time, we were just after having a young family. And I told him that I just felt that maybe he should play on with the 21s that were coming through, and maybe it was time for a few older lads to push on. But you know, after another conversation or two, he convinced me to go back, and, you know, credit to him. Everything he said in that phone call came true, and you could just tell from the first training session that things were just completely different, professional-wise and setup-wise and different things like that.
And what would a typical Jim McGuinness training session have been like back then? I read there was a lot of running and vomiting and all sorts.
Yeah, it was just, you know what, we had gone from Mickey Moore and John Joe, those kind of guys, and Brian McGyver, to be going through you know, ball drills and conditioning through that. But with Jim, you just went back to pure basics. It was gruesome. It really was. But it was what it had to be, because we needed honesty. We had to trust each other. We had to, you know, put our bodies on the line, and we did every single night. There was no easy night. There was no night where you could say that's going to be a handy one tonight. You saw then, when it came to the games, game was easy, to be honest. That was the easy part of it. On game day, you would never be nervous, because you had worked harder Tuesday and Thursday. You know what I mean? So it was just a case of going out and playing now.
Yeah, and did Jim, like, we hear about this thing of him changing the whole culture of Donegal football and changing all your mentalities. Is that true, Kev?
Everything clicked at their own time. Jim was the man for it, because he had come on that journey with us. He had lost those four or five Ulsters. He had been on the teams who had messed up, who had gone partying and maybe didn't do the right thing. At that time when Jim came in, myself, Colin McFadden, Rory Kavanagh, Christy Toy, we were coming towards the end of their careers. Do you know, when you think about it, it was do or die time. So everything was ready. Those lads, we were all ready to buy in. There was no nonsense in Jim's terms. I don't think there was anybody who had to really be disciplined for drink or any of that. Everybody was just ready to knuckle down, and Jim put everything in place so that could happen.
Yeah, and was this, as Mick was kind of saying, was this training methods and regimes, was it just a complete shock to the system, or was it a bit bonkers at times?
It was just ferocious. It could go on for hours.
Uh-huh.
After training, like, you would just come back at nights, and honestly, you wouldn't be able to sleep, because your body would be shaking. It would go through that much pain. But you would just get up the next day, he would recover, and you'd go at it again. Everybody bought into it. Everybody knew what we were hoping to achieve. And listen, we trusted the man. He told us straight to our face what we needed to do. And he told us we were going to suffer, and we did. So, you know, everybody, even had we not won that year, just say your first Ulster, I think honestly we'd have been able to look each other in the eye and say, you know what, we gave it everything we had.
Mm-hmm. And you obviously won the league, and you won the Ulster title, beating the likes of Tyrone and Derry along the way. I mean, that must have been a great satisfying moment for yourself and the county, particularly because of the lean years before it.
Yeah, the Ulster title was something we always wanted. Brian McGever always used to say, like, obviously every team wants to win the All-Ireland, but Brian McGever used to say, you can't win the All-Ireland before you won Ulster. You know, you have to win Ulster to get your to know what you're about, and to suppose get the confidence in you to go forward. So we're always chasing that. And then 2011, I think game by game, we just felt that it was going to happen. We didn't fear anybody. Tyrone was a big step in the semi-final, because they dominated for years, and we felt as if we owed them one or two. So that was a big step for us to take. And then once we got to Derry, then it was just a matter of carrying out the game plan and getting the job done.
So you would have seen Tyrone as the biggest obstacle probably that year in the Ulster.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I suppose everything falls for you. If you look back now, Tyrone were probably on the way down the hill.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Had we met Tyrone a year or two earlier under Jim, who knows? Just sometimes things fall for you. And like, those lads were coming towards the end of their careers, and they had won everything. So maybe hunger probably wasn't as big as it was for them at the time. And well, we were on the opposite side of the scale. We were seriously hungry. So everything just fell for us, you know.
Obviously, the quarterfinals, Kildare. I was reading before that you used to do a lot of practice with a club man, Tom Gillespie, is it? Kick practicing before matches, shooting.
Yeah, from the very start of my career, I would be down every, like, just say if we train on a Tuesday, I would go down to the pitch on a Wednesday. If we train on a Thursday, I'd go down Friday. Just practicing shots, really. Tom was he was a tough character. He wouldn't let you go until he was happy with what you were producing. And people say, people still every day ask me about that score, but I never really think about it, because he used to make me do that, no joke, maybe 15, 20 times a night down the pitch. So it was just second nature at that time when it came off. So it's the perfect example of, you know, if you didn't practice that kind of stuff, in no way would it come off for you, you know.
That game, sorry, go on, Mike.
talk to me about this point in 2011, Cass, against Kildare.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, we just wanted the game over. We were out on our feet. We thought we'd won a few times. Kildare came back strong. They looked as if they won it. And if you remember, Christy Toy came up with a couple of great scores to bring us back into it. Yeah, and then he got a goal and a point to bring us back into it. And it was a Saturday evening. It was a bit strange feeling. The lights were on and everybody was just wrecked. And the last thing any Gaelic football tell you, the last thing you want to do is to go back and do it all again the following week. So, listen, there was one shot there. There was a chance to go for it. And we just went for it. And luckily, it went over and we'll get into the next round.
Yeah, and I was watching that Jimmy's Winning Matches documentary, and he literally said it got to a stage in that game where there was no coaching. It was all just down to the players on the pitch. Did you feel like, okay, let's just do my own thing here and just get over the line for y'all?
Yeah, it is at that stage. There is no tactics at that stage. I remember during that game, we're probably at that stage we were match up, and you were put him on a certain player and you had to stay with him. I think during the course of that game I might have marked 5 different players. It was just there was no coaching in it. It was survival of the fittest, you know. And there is, at that stage, everything goes out the window. Normally when the ball comes to that area of the pitch and there's a shield up, our tactics would be to switch it to left and right again and try and move the opposition. That just went out the window, and you trust your instinct, you know.
Mm-hmm. And just pure another instinct, Kev, and you just went for it.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it could have went anywhere, but at the end of the day, if you don't, you know, what do you play for, really? You play to get into those positions and think that you'll be in those kind of... when I was down those pitch, I would always put it through my head that it was always for a good or. I'd be saying that, you know, if I ever got the opportunity to hit a point to win a championship, you know, that I would take it. And that just goes through your head. So, you know, there's no point doing it down the pitch if you're not going to actually try it, you know.
So, yeah. you beat Kildare, mad game, obviously. Then you get another mad game in the semi-final against Dublin. Obviously, it's remembered for the tactics that you all implemented in that game. Would you have been aware of what you were going to do that day, weeks in advance, or was it kind of later in the week of the game?
We had this system in place where our number 10 and 12 would drop back naturally, and our centre half back would drop back, and so we had cover. We were used to doing it all year, but we didn't practice it at all until the morning of the game. Jim announced what we were going to do. This is just before we boarded the coach in the hotel to go to the pitch. So we're all just kind of looking at each other. Nobody really doubted or questioned it. He just said, "Listen, this is how we're going to beat Dublin. You're going to pull everybody back. Call McFadden's the sole striker. You're just going to frustrate them." And, you know, if you look back in the video, he said that, you know, the likes of Alan Brogan and Bernie Brogan, who are used to scoring heavily, they're going to start taking pot shots from crazy angles. We're going to turn over possession and we'll try and hit them in a counter-attack. And it nearly paid off. Colin McFadden had a shot for goal and just went over the bar. And if that went in, you'd have probably beaten Dublin, and there's no way Kerry would have managed that system in the final. No way.
And you were talking, obviously you lose it to Dublin, and there was talk after that. When you were saying earlier there, you were going to retire after that one season with Guinness. Is that true, or do you think you're going to stay on a second because Donegal had done so well in that season?
Yeah, well, initially it was when the conversations happened with Jim Forrester, it was just 1 year. He was under the impression that he had this young team coming through, but he needed a few old heads around. And he said, "Listen, just give me 1 year and then try and develop the lads." So that was the plan. That was always the plan. And then after the Dublin game, we had come so close, and I met him in the hotel after. And he said, "Listen, I'll see you next year." And I said, "Yeah, absolutely," because we knew that we were close to going the distance. We knew there was very few teams out there who could live with us at that particular time. So the plan was to go back and put the shoulder to the wheel again.
And obviously we all know with the book or whatever it happened. But there was talk then, it was in April 2012, were you asked to come back to the panel. Was that something you considered strongly, or did you think it was probably best off to stay off the panel?
Yeah, obviously I considered it. He came to the school and we sat down and we had a chat, a very good chat. I told him what I thought and he told me what he thought, and you know, we agreed on some things and we disagreed on other things, but there was no major row. And he said, listen, would you like to come back to the panel? And it was Easter time. I was going on holidays with the family. The school was closing. So I said, just give me a week to think about it. And I did think about it, but I thought hand in heart that it would do more damage me going back than good, to be honest with you. I just felt that after the whole episode, maybe some relationships within the camp wouldn't be the same. And I just didn't want to be that person who would go back and maybe upset things. So I just felt it better that I let them carry on and I would just stay where I was.
And was Jim approachable through his whole stint, Kev? Like, was he, like, could you go up to him after training and go through bits and pieces?
Other players probably could. There was just something, I'm not sure what it was between myself and himself. I think it was probably because I played with him a lot and I kind of knew him off the pitch as well. And there was just something between us. I don't know what it was, even though he asked me to come back. There wasn't that kind of openness about it. So I knew what he was trying to achieve with Donegal. So I just kept the head down. So I could never say that I went to him about anything or I had a discussion. Mm. I just kind of did my job and stayed out of the way.
Mm. And touching on that game in 2011, like, Jesus, I was at it. I think it was up for Hogan myself. Like, was that one of the kind of weirdest games you've ever played in?
It was. Not for the reason that you may think. Everybody keeps saying to me, "Oh, what about the booing and stuff?" That didn't affect us, or we didn't hear it really. To be honest with you, I just remember that game being in the melting pot, and I think there was maybe 10-15 minutes to go, and I looked to my right hand side, and Michael Murphy was standing there, centre half back. And I remember roaring at Michael to get up the fucking field because we could have won. Dublin were there for the taking, but he kind of glanced over at the sideline and the orders were to stay. So he stayed. And I think we spoke about Kildare game and that there not been any coaching and thrown caution to the wind. I think if we threw caution to the wind against Dublin, we'd have probably beat them that day. And that's why it's strange for me, you know.
Yeah, like, they were definitely there for the taking, Kev, without a doubt, really.
I'm just going to push forward. Obviously, year before last, club, you had a great run with the club. Was that something that you, probably one of the best memories you'd have of your career?
Definitely it is. It's something, growing up, it always, listen, it's an unbelievable honour to play for your county. And once you're there, you're completely in it and you love it. But it was always like, after 16, 17, 18, winning the minor championship, the next step for me was to win a senior. We did in 2002, thankfully. But then you're kind of looking, I remember just, there's a competition that's played down here, is Camortis, Pellin and Gilter, which all the Gilter clubs play each other. And it's always on a Paddy's Day. And I just always remember going up to the bar every Paddy's Day and you'd be sitting watching the club finals thinking, Jesus, look at them. And you'd say they're miles ahead of us. And you just in your head, you'd be wondering how good they are, especially up here in Ulster. Like the Ulster Club Championship's seriously, seriously competitive. And watching Cross and Glen and these great teams, you dream of being there, but you never think you're actually going to be there, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's important to mention Roycey, because I actually played with Roycey in college, and Pat's a great lad, loved the crack, good footballer as well, always had a smile on his face. And obviously that happened in the midst of your run in the championship. I read that Ian McGee said you didn't want to make a crusade out of it, you didn't want to use it as kind of energy and do it for the wrong reasons. Is it right that Mickey Hart came to talk to you in the aftermath of that?
Yeah, obviously Roycey was a big part of our dressing room and our crack, and he trained with us the morning of the crack, and we're supposed to come back the following day for training again, but he decided to go other routes that night, so obviously afterwards we all were close to him, but there was a few people in the panel who were very close to him, so we didn't know how to approach this. So I'd be very good friends with Kevin Hughes, who had some serious tragedy in his own life. He lost a brother and a sister in similar circumstances. So I asked him, would himself and Mickey come down to speak to the panel? And they came down, fair play to them, and they met the whole panel. And that was Mickey's take. It was you know, you hear this, oh, let's all galvanize together and let's do it for that cause, where Mickey advises not to do that, not to make a crusade out of it, just see it what it is. All we can do is go out and try and lift the spirits through football. That's all we could do. We couldn't do anything else. We couldn't bring anybody back. We couldn't make anybody feel any better. So, you know, that talk was great, and it was great for the lads. And after that, we decided just to go out and do the very best that we could.
And I was
And what's kept you going so long with the club, Kev? Like, is it the young lads kind of inspiring you on, like the likes of McNeil and bits and pieces, or what can inspire you to keep going for so long at this stage?
Yeah, definitely as the young lads. Like, we were spoke before, but being blessed with a crop of players coming our age group. Well, these lads that are here now, they did the same thing, 12s, 14s, 16s, minors, 21s. They won Ulster, they won everything. So they're used to winning. There's a good energy about them. And I suppose it's just that competitive streak. Once I went back in playing with them, you know what I mean? You don't want to let the young lads take a hand at you. So you have to be at yourself. So I think it's definitely those lads who keep me energised at the minute anyway.
And talk to me about Owen McNeilis, Kev. Like, he left the Donegal panel there last year or two. Like, he doesn't really have any aspirations to play county, does he?
No. He would play, no problem at all, but he just doesn't like the whole routine and the whole travelling and training. And he's a very laid-back character. He loves his golf and he loves his free time. And it's just the whole structure we spoke about earlier on, about if you're going to make it at that level, it's just living, training, sleeping, eating, that's all you do. And it just wasn't for him. And, you know, credit to him, he was his own man, he made the decision. He went to London there for some work before this whole virus hit. So we don't know where he's sitting now, but hopefully he'll be back before too long.
Yeah, class act, Kev.
Ah, he's unreal. He's just naturally gifted, you know. You know, me and him would clash at times because I would be on to him to get stuck in more, and because I know he just hasn't, but he just turn around and laugh at you anyway, so there's no point talking to him.
Last one for me, Cassin. Thanks very much for your time. You've been really good. The best player you played with and the best player you played against?
Against, have to be Dermot Connolly, definitely. I just think he has everything. You know, just he has everything. Right foot, left foot, good in the air. If it gets tough, he can stand up for himself. I just think he's just such an unbelievable footballer. And probably with you're talking, had this conversation before, like everybody speaks of Michael Murphy, he's definitely there. For me, his own family reminds him, 2002, 2003, Adrian Sweeney was playing for us.
Baller.
Like, unreal. And I always make a comparison. If he was playing now and he had what the players have now, dietitians, weights, all this kind of stuff, he would have been unreal. So I'm torn between those two.
I'm surprised you didn't mention David Brady there, no? I've only messed with him. Cass, thanks very much. That was brilliant.
Listen, no ball. All the best, lads.
Nice one. Cheers, Cass. Thank
you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Thanks for listening in, and don't forget to follow the Mick and Max GA Football Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and we are on Spotify.